Guys, I'm sad.
What a way to... what a start.
You know, basketball made me feel something, which is more than I can say for BYU basketball in the last, 3 years maybe. But it's the hope that kills you. And BYU has exceeded expectations just enough to give me hope, but hasn't been quite good enough in conference play to give me the catharsis that I need to feel really good about where we're at. How are you guys feeling today? By the way, welcome again aboard the Hype Train podcast. My name is Joe Wheat, as always, with my boys Hunter Miller and Trevor Levitt. I guess it shouldn't be like a fully sad podcast because BYU did beat a top 25 team a week ago by like 20 points. So as far as like the fraud squad meter, I still feel like BYU has a squad, but man, that was devastating last night.
Well, when you look at really the last two games, you blow a 16-point lead at half to Texas Tech, and then you come back from 13 against Houston, and then you don't score the last 2 minutes, 15 seconds. So just what you're talking about, like the emotions that we've been given a whole lot of hope and have had it dashed pretty brutally the last two games.
Which game hurt worse, I guess, is a good question. It does suck because like you guys recorded 2 weeks ago. Since we recorded, like Joe said, like BYU played a top 25 team at home and like not only won, but like won pretty handedly.
Well, they've won two games since we last recorded. So it's like there's definitely been some good. Yeah.
So yeah, so I think two so. And two's, I think it, I don't know. Maybe. I have to check the timestamp. I think yeah, it probably has because they played UCF on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the next Tuesday. Yeah. So it would have been two and two since you guys recorded. So it does like the recency bias of like the fact that it's 0-2 in the last two has us coming into this podcast being like, like BYU basketball like sucks, we're sad. But like they also had they had a road win and then a win against a top 25 team and then a road at home and then a road loss and then a home loss against like what KenPom at least has as the number one team in the country in Houston, and they almost won. So I guess like which I think it's easy that the two wins, like the one that had us most excited was Iowa State, but then of like the two losses, I guess, which was more depressing.
For me, 1000%, it was Texas Tech. Like, I think I can live with, I can live with it. Like BYU losing a close one, you had a shot to win it, didn't go in, whatever, against the number four team in the country. Like I can deal with that.
You've been dealing with it through all of West Coast Conference because it seemed like that was every time against Gonzaga.
Right.
Like I watched this Houston game 100 times in the last 10 years because it literally was like frame for frame, like what BYU versus Gonzaga games looked like.
Yeah. Blowing a 16-point lead at halftime against Texas Tech. That's bad. Like, I know it's a tough environment. Texas Tech is a really, really good basketball team. That feels like a win you gotta have.
Yeah.
If BYU splits with Texas Tech in Houston, I think BYU's still looking at maybe like a 6 seed in the NCAA tournament. Like we're still feeling really good about where BYU's at. But unfortunately, like you don't get points for losing to good teams close. Like there's no awards for having a lead at halftime, which BYU has had in virtually every game they've played.
Yeah.
In KenPom you do, right?
And that's like the thing.
You kind of do.
Still fifth in the country in net and they're 2-4 in conference play. Like all of these losses, BYU has shown well, which is which is great news. It's what we wanted from the football team this year. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still incredibly frustrating that they just cannot seem to get over that hump. Because this team is good enough, it feels like, to have a really special season. But for whatever reason, there's just some serious mental block as soon as there's, 6 minutes left to go in a game that they just can't hit the shot when it matters.
Well, I mean, forget the last 6 minutes. It feels like there's a half. I mean, pick a half per game where BYU can't seem to hit anything. And I think that's what made Texas Tech so devastating is that first half was about as much fun as I've had watching BYU basketball in the last couple of years. I mean, just even if Texas Tech would make a three, we would respond with two or three of our own. Everybody's contributing. Everybody's looking good. And then you go into halftime feeling really good about it because you're up 16. It should be, you know, the thought that I had even going into the half was like, well, we're up 16. If we're going to blow this, Texas Tech has to score at least 17 more points than us in the second half, which seems like a tall task. They ended up outscoring us by, what is that, like 24 in the second half. And just watching your team not be able to hit anything and then watching the ball go down the court into the hands of Pope Isaacs and he can't miss. I mean, that's just, it's just devastating. It's just one of those things where you're just watching and you can't control anything, but it's just devastating to watch. And it was just that one. That was horrible. Between the two, Joe, you hit it right on the head. You lose to Houston and that's okay. But Texas Tech is one of those that, it felt similar to, maybe not quite as bad because it's not a rival, but it felt similar to Utah, where just you had every reason to win that game and you just couldn't finish.
What's up, Cougar fans? Let me tell you about our newest sponsor, Charlie Hustle. Charlie Hustle is the premier college apparel brand in all of the internet. Seriously, they have everything you need. They have royal, they have navy, they have white. Kalani could fill his entire wardrobe with just three clicks. From tees to hoodies to crew neck sweatshirts to 1984 memorabilia, they have it all for you. Head over to charliehustle.com and get geared up today.
Yeah. Like, on one hand, Texas Tech was road, and, like, things get crazy in road games. And, like, that seemed like BYU just ran out of gas, where it's, like, against Houston. I think Houston hurts worse. Like, I get the halftime lead and everything. But like you had a wide open three, no one within 10 feet of Trevin Nell to go up by 2 points at what was like 30 second mark?
It was like 45.
Yeah. Under a minute. Like who is supposed to be and has been like BYU's best shooter all season and misses. Like that's a dagger to the heart of any fan. Like, and Houston's a better team. You know, like there's no shame in losing that game, especially losing close. Like BYU scored, tied for scoring the most points that Houston's, you know, let up all season long in 68. So it's like, considering the facts, like that wasn't such a bad loss, but I think it's just like the way that it unfolded in the last 2 minutes. Like you're right there. You have a lead at one point and then you can't score in the last 2 minutes. You miss an open three. Like that was like a storybook ending up until it wasn't, where you fight and you claw back from down double digits. Like BYU almost did to Houston what Texas Tech did to BYU, right? Like, and to have it be in your grasp and then for it to, you know, clank off the rim and, you know, and followed by, I guess we'll say, a questionable foul call is like, that's like such a because it was like, you saw Trevin get the ball and you thought like, this is it. Like BYU is going to hit this three. They're going to upset Houston at home. Like it's going to be one of those games where the students storm the court. Like it's going to be awesome. And then, bonk. You know, clunk, and then Trevin fouls them. And then suddenly you're down 3 points and you Dallin Hall airballs a three. And it was just, like I said, like it was a storybook ending up until it wasn't. And I think that's what hurts most for me, at least.
I will say, I think the one thing too that I'm trying not to get into the mode of is with this team, especially, it feels like I'm in the same spot that I was with football, where it's like, we just need to win one more game and we're going to a bowl. Yeah. And like you look at some of these losses and it's like, man, what a win number four Houston would have been on our resume going into tournament time. Same thing with like Texas Tech. Like if we were just able to finish any of those games, like those are resume building wins. And now it's just like, you're looking, I find myself looking ahead. It's like, okay, got to beat Texas, got to beat West Virginia. It's just one of those things where this team, I feel like, has been really good and is good. Like we talked about the squad of fraud. I believe they're a squad, but at the end of the day, like you have to win games and you have to get to the tournament in order to be truly a squad. And I find myself as a fan panicking a little bit. And I think that's the worst part is losing all these close games is it's like, man, what difference is that going to make in March?
Yeah, the computer was too sad to crunch the analytics yesterday with the Frauder squad. But last I revisited the rankings and the numbers, it is BYU still squad. I mean, it's dumb to look at it this way, I will admit. But it is one of those things where it's like before the season, if BYU had even gotten a road win against UCF and Iowa State to start this Big 12 play and, you know, came this close to beating Houston, like BYU fans would have taken it as a massive win. But it's the same thing with like football where it's like, if you would have told me BYU football was going to start 5-2 or whatever it was, also would have been like a big surprise. And we all know how that ended and expectations change as the season goes on. But like, I don't know, like, is there any solace in the fact that it's like, we all thought BYU is going to be really bad this year. And like, some people are like, they're going to go winless in the Big 12. And now here we are, like 2-4, like not great, but in the hardest basketball conference in America against like BYU, and BYU hasn't even played any of the bad Big 12 teams yet. Right. Like they've been playing the good ones and then they've been able to at least hang close in every game, come away with a couple.
And like, we keep bringing up like I think it's only natural for BYU fans to bring up the 5-2 start that the football team had.
Yeah.
This is completely different. Like,
okay.
BYU in football skirted by some teams that at the time we thought, like Arkansas, we thought that was going to be a really awesome win. Arkansas won like 4 games and it was still a great win by BYU standards. But like looking back on it, BYU in their wins, they needed a lot of turnovers. They needed a lot of things to go their way. The offense was never very good, like had excellent performances, I would say, in really any of the games that they played. There were clear flaws with BYU, even in their wins. This BYU basketball team, And their losses when they had them were like horrific losses.
Yeah.
The basketball team, all like they haven't had a bad loss yet. And that's kind of the blessing and the curse of being in the Big 12. Like you're going to lose more games, but all of BYU's losses so far are quad one and they have one quad two. But from like a resume standpoint, I think there's 8 teams in the country that have more quad one wins than BYU right now. So it's not like they haven't beaten anyone. They have 3 quad one wins. They've gone on the road and they beat UCF, which is a good win. Like UCF is beaten Kansas. They've beaten Texas. UCF is a solid basketball team. They beat Iowa State by 20 plus points. And Iowa State is, they're 3-2 in conference right now. I think they're ranked in the top 25, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, 23rd in the country. They've beaten San Diego State. And all of their losses, they were in it right until the end. So there's nothing that I've seen so far from the BYU basketball team where I'm like, okay, they're a paper tiger here. They aren't very good. Their record has been fooling us. Like we're 18 games into the season. We're about 2/3 of the way through. And BYU is still ranked in the top 25 and they're 5th in net. Like this is completely different than what happened with the football team, because we've seen enough from the basketball team against good teams to show, okay, this team can at least compete. We didn't see that night in and night out from the football team, but we are seeing it with the basketball team. The question becomes is, what happens to your confidence when you get this close to beating good teams and you keep blowing it at the end of games? Like at what point does your mental aspect start to give out? You start pressing and all of a sudden you start, instead of losing by like 5 points. Now you're losing by 10, 15, 20. That's more my concern, is like, will the mental aspect of this team fall apart if losses start to pile up?
Which I think is where the comparison happens with football, right?
Yeah.
It's like, that's exactly, yeah, it's precisely what happened with football, where it's they lose to Kansas, and then you have like, you know, you have some losses in there. You come out of the bye week, you lose big to TCU, you lose big on the road to Texas, and then suddenly games that are winnable suddenly aren't.
Yeah, I think that happened to the defense in football. I think the offense just
The offense never got to the point where that could happen.
Like, yeah. And so that was always the issue, right? Like, there was always signs that, okay, we were just waiting for the offense to get going at any point. And when it just never got going, that's when games started getting away from BYU. And we just had to accept, okay, like, half of BYU sucks. Like, half of their football team just isn't good right now.
Yeah.
And I don't see that with the basketball team. Like, they're very strong on offense. They're very strong on defense. I think they're top 20 in KenPom for both adjusted offense and adjusted defense. Like, the advanced metrics love BYU basketball. They hated BYU football, and rightfully so. Like, yeah, even with the five basketball. even with the 5-2 record, the advanced analytics, like, you know, FPI, S&P Plus, Sagarin, they all thought BYU was a paper tiger, and all those rankings, the highest they got was like mid-50s. Mm-hmm. Like, the advanced analytics love BYU basketball, and that's something that BYU fans should find comfort in, that this actually is a really good basketball team, and we're far enough into the season that we know that this isn't a fluky thing. Like, they're good enough to hang with these teams. It's just getting over the mental aspect of, okay, can we score more than 6 points in the final 6 minutes against a top 25 team?
Well, even before then, can we look for better shot selection? I feel like that's like, if there was an Achilles heel to this team, it's taking a bad shot at like the worst time.
Yeah, it's not great. There are certainly moments where a guy like Jackson Robinson, like, we love it when he hits the 30 footers, and we think it's the most awesome thing in the world. We hate it when he misses them. The concern with me, I feel like BYU has gotten better the last couple games of dribble penetration and scoring at the basket. I think they've done a really good job with that. I need to go through the numbers to see, like they shot 23% from the 3-point line yesterday and shot for a better percentage than Houston did for the game, because they did such an awesome job getting to the basket. So like, they are changing their shot selection a little bit. My concern is they can't hit free throws when it matters. Like, your best, like, Spencer Johnson, Dallin Hall, even Jackson Robinson, like, these are your best shooters on the team from behind the 3-point line, but they can't hit a 15 footer without anyone guarding him. Trevin Nell at the end of the game, like, that's the, both Richie Saunders and Trevin Nell had open looks. Like, that's about as good of a look as you can ask for. That's great shot selection, and they just clanked it. Like, that's more my concern. I definitely agree with you though, that like, there needs to be less hero ball. And when things get tight, there does need to be a little bit more ball movement, so you're not settling for a 35 footer with, you know, 20 seconds left on the shot clock.
It's a bad thing that the most at peace I felt with a player going to the free throw line last night was Foose.
Yeah, no, I 100%. I felt the exact same thing.
Times are bad.
Like, this
sound
is
bad.
Famine. Yeah, like, it's...
So
Foose is objectively a better free throw shooter than Downhall. 1,000%.
He was 3-for-4 in the clutch.
Everyone's objectively better. What's he, 50% as a point
56,
guard?
56, I think, last I heard.
That's crazy. That's like Shaq numbers as like a 6'3 point guard. What are we doing? Point guards should be like 80% plus. So here's a take I'm workshopping. You tell me if I'm on to something or not. BYU's late game struggles and inability to close out games like we saw against Houston or like we saw against Texas Tech and what we almost saw against UCF, is a result of BYU's shot selection and style of play the first 18 minutes of the game. Because when it comes down to it, seems like, you know, BYU's not shooting free throws and who knows if they'd make him or not. But when you get down late and BYU commits a foul, the other team's going to the free throw line, you know, in the bonus or the double bonus. Doesn't seem like BYU's necessarily getting to the free throw line and getting foul calls. So they're not in a position where it's like, hey, we can, you know, try to break the press or try to attack the basket and just hope that we get a foul call, because no matter what, we're going to the line. So like that, I think that hinders BYU's ability to close out games like that, because you can see it where it's like teams play with a lead and the other team starts to play more physical and they can just get foul calls. And, you know, obviously part of it is having to make free throws, which BYU has proven they're not especially good in that department. But like, I think that I'm workshopping it. I need to dive more into like the numbers. Like, how often, how many games is BYU actually like in the double bonus with like 2 minutes left to go or not? But that's at least like the take I'm workshopping, that it's like, if BYU were to be more aggressive during the first 18 minutes of the half, then maybe, you know, in the last couple of minutes, either to close out the first half or to close out the second half, BYU is going to be going to the line a lot more often because they find themselves in the double bonus.
You know, I agree, because, like, get this. Houston's last field goal of the game was with 4:17 to go.
So under 4 minutes, they're shooting free throws. Like, that's how they're scoring all their points.
They scored 7 points in the last 4 minutes. All of them were free throws. Like, yep. they were 0-for over the last 4 minutes on field goal attempts, which is what you want, right?
Yeah. But they're going to the free throw line. And again, like, credit to them. Houston doesn't, they made them.
And Houston doesn't get to the line very often either. I think I heard on the broadcast last night that they're averaging like 10 free throw attempts a game, mm-hmm. and they shot 22. And we can complain all we want about like refereeing, which, like, I don't know, everyone seems to hate Big 12 refs, but like everyone hates all refs. Like, but
it's not a Big 12 ref thing, it's a college basketball ref thing.
I think it's a
bingo.
Yes. At the same time, I think it's a, like, BYU fouls a lot. Like, BYU plays physical defense, but part of that, like, it's a lazy take to say, because like all, like, half of BYU's team is just a bunch of white guys out there, but they're not athletic enough to stay in front of these guards. Like, mm-hmm. the Big 12 has some elite guard play. And it was clear to me last night that BYU did not have a single person that could stay in front of Shedd.
They're also not
to
big
be fair,
enough.
There's not a lot of people. There's not a lot of
or Crier. Right. But like, it feels like, I don't know. Like,
but they're also not.
It feels like Jackson Robinson should be that guy, and he just hasn't been. Like, sure. And Dallin Hall obviously isn't that guy. He's just getting ran in circles out there on pick and roll. So they're able to drive, get down low, and you're putting guys like Ali, like Atiki, and Khalifa in bad spots where now they have to foul down low because the guard got blown by on the perimeter.
Well, and
they're also not big enough to contest like at the rim without fouling.
Yeah.
Like, Noah Waterman is probably what, your tallest guy? He's 6'11". And like, yeah, even he's what, like,
he's 6'10".
Yeah. And he's not like built like a center, right? Like, he's not, like, he's a pretty tall and lanky dude, right? He shoots threes and all that. So, like, he's not a traditional drive to the paint and he's going to meet you at the rim and contest your shots. Like, Matt Harms could be lanky and do that because he was 7'10". But, like, I don't know. Like, Foose is 6'9". Like, you just don't have a lot of size to, like, when your guards aren't able to stay in front of the opponent and they drive to the rim. BYU's not going to be able to have a guy that can slide in and fill the space and contest and block a shot without fouling.
And to answer your question, Texas Tech's last field goal was made with 2:09 left in the game, and they scored 8 points after that on free throws.
So Houston had 7 points in the final 4 minutes, all off free throws. Texas Tech had 8 points in the final 2 minutes,
yes,
all off free throws. All right, yeah. So my workshop take is maybe working. Obviously, those are going to be a little skewed just because BYU was playing from behind. So, like, they kind of have to foul, particularly in the last minute. Like, crazy that, that might be true for Houston in the last minute, but it is crazy that Houston didn't make a single field goal in the final 4 minutes, because BYU is not going to start fouling because they're playing from behind at the 4 minute mark. Like, that's what they do at the 45 second mark. So, That's kind of nuts.
And before that, I think they made two field goals total in the final 5 minutes to Texas Tech. So, like, I just don't, like, I don't know what you do with that. Besides just, like, get better.
Be better.
Get good, get more athletic. I don't know. I think that's something that's going to have to get better with recruiting. And again, I keep hearing, like, I see a lot on Twitter is like, oh, BYU needs to shoot less three-pointers. That was not something that we were hearing until Big 12 play, because BYU was hitting their three-pointers, and everyone loves it when BYU scoring 100 points because, you know, they're making 18 threes a game. But, like, BYU kind of has to shoot more three-pointers because, like, that's what they're good at. Like, I have no faith that BYU is going to be able to consistently hit mid-range jumpers or contested layups at the rim. Like, we saw it against Houston. I forget their center's name, but I think he blocked a shot. I think he blocked layups off the backboards LeBron style, like, four or five times in the action that I saw. Like, BYU has to shoot threes because it's what the personnel dictates they have to do, which sucks. Like, if the shots aren't falling, like against Texas Tech, you shot 10 for 20 in the first half from three, and everyone loves the 3-point barrage. And in the second half, you go 3 for 22, and all of a sudden we're shooting too many 3-pointers. Like, it really is live by the three, die by the three, but it's kind of how it has to be. But the good news is BYU is uniquely suited to do that. They just can't hit shots at the end of games. And that's where the downfall is happening, because you don't have that guy who you can, they don't have that Alex Barcelo type guy where you're just like, okay, 2 minutes left to go, you're taking the shot.
Yeah. I think with that, my only thing with the threes is when it's early in the shot clock and it's 8 feet behind the 3-point line, like, that's when it becomes an issue for me. I think we do tend to generalize, like, oh, we're shooting too many threes. I think we're shooting too many deep threes early in the shot clock. That's definitely, I mentioned shot selection earlier. I also, Hunter's inspired me with his workshopped take. I do think, too, we run into a little bit of issues at the end of games because, as you mentioned, Joe, we're guarding these athletic freaks, and I think we just get tired. I mean, you get bumped, you get taken to the rim, you are shuffling as fast as you can to keep in front of these guys for 38 minutes. And then you get to the end of the games, you're supposed to shoot free throws. This is a team that we just talked about shoots a lot of threes, and like playing defense, or like even as like a boxer, like you're taking like body shots, it takes out the legs, and you shoot free throws with your legs. You shoot a lot of threes with your legs. And when all of a sudden you take those out, 'cause you're just straight up fatigued, all of a sudden you're airballing stuff, you're clanking it off the front of the rim, whatever the case may be. And I do think that we are seeing a lot of just the, like you said, Joe, a lot of pure athleticism on these other teams. And I think it's just wearing our guys down. You look at the Texas Tech game, like we were hot up until halftime, and then we just died, like fell off a cliff. And I think a lot of that is, you're being out athleticismed and you're just getting tired.
Yeah. I mean, I knew BYU, I felt like BYU was going to lose the Texas game the moment they had, I think, three chances on their first possession of the second half. They took 3 3-pointers and missed all of them. I think they were 0 for 5 to start the half in like the first 30 seconds. Like that's where everything falls apart on you. And I think you're right, Trevor, like, especially late in games, I think they probably do just get a little fatigued.
Well, and you look at the uptick in offensive rebounding too. I mean, it just, the Big 12 will take out and will hack away. I mean, we laughed at Dan Campbell talking about biting kneecaps, but like, that's like what the Big 12 does.
Yeah.
And they bite your kneecaps, and then they go and they grab an offensive board over you, and all of a sudden you're down 10.
Dude, that John Rothstein has like a recurring post where he talks about every night in the Big 12, and it's a picture of William Wallace from Braveheart. Like, that, the Big 12 rules, man. I love it so much.
It's fun. I just hate losing close games.
I do too, but I'd rather lose a close game to, you know, obviously I'd rather lose a close game to Houston than lose a close one to Portland. But it's just like, I don't know. I'm having a good time. This is even with the losses, it's still the most fun I've had watching BYU basketball in a long time because the conference is so awesome. Like this, the Big 12 in basketball is everything the SEC and Big 10 think they are in football.
Yep.
Where the SEC thinks, oh, the top eight teams in the SEC can win any Power 5 conference in America. That's actually probably how it is in the Big 12, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, look at West Virginia beat Kansas.
Like when West Virginia is beating Kansas, it's just like, okay, this league is drunk.
Like, name the last time like Vanderbilt beat Bama or like
I'm pretty
Georgia.
Sure. Does Oklahoma State have a conference win yet? Has the circle of suck been completed?
I don't think they do.
Well, let's hope BYU's not. If they're the Detroit Pistons of the conference, let's hope that BYU doesn't fall apart there. Hopefully, right. That's two wins.
Don't beat Kyle Kuzma and be like the goal. The goal now is to not be the team to lose to them.
Okay. My take is continuing to be workshopped because as you guys have been talking, I've been doing some more research. BYU in six conference games is in the final 2 minutes, 6 for 11 from free throw line. Oof. And seven of those came against UCF. So in the other five conference games, BYU has shot 4 free throws across 5 games in under 2 minutes in conference.
It's not good.
You're averaging less.
They're 2 for 4.
You're averaging less than one free throw a game in the last 2 minutes.
Yes. So yes, BYU has a great ability to not get to the free throw line under 2 minutes with the game on the line. Again, some of that's going to be on a curve, right? Because you're playing from behind in a few of those instances. But like that's a great way to make up points if you're playing from behind is getting to the free throw line and getting points when the clock's not running, right? Like uncontested. Yeah. Free shots with a stopped clock. Like that's a great way to come back is by getting to the line and making your free throws. And BYU has shown it that they cannot do that.
It's how they let UCF back into the game. Like I think they're up by 13 with under 10 to go. Yep. And I can't remember how many free throws UCF shot at the end of that game, but like they were able to get points when the clock wasn't running.
What was your thing? What was the minute mark for the Texas Tech one where they,
I think it was
under 5 minutes, under 2 minutes.
They had 2 field goals in the last 5:17, I think.
So I need to see, I'm going back to look in the last 5:17. They had made two field goals. So yeah, it was six. BYU was down 1. And for the last 5 minutes of that game, they made 2 field goals and BYU ended up losing by what, like 9 points?
It's
free throws are a great way to maintain and or lose a lead.
So they lost by 7 points. They were down 1 with 5 minutes to go, with 5:30 left to go. Hey Cougar fans, just wanted to tell you all about our new sponsor, Defense Drinks. Defense is a premium recovery mix specifically designed to aid in injury prevention and tissue restoration, setting it apart from typical sports drinks. Defense is formulated with high quality ingredients, primarily collagen and vitamin C, to help keep athletes playing the sports they love. Whether you're an athlete or just at home after a tough workout, Defense can help you recover and recover quickly. Defense contains collagen, which research suggests can help strengthen and restore tissues around joints, reducing the risk of soft tissue injuries. So head to defensedrinks.com today to place your order. Use the code HYPETRAIN at checkout for 10% off, and right now, get free shipping on all orders of $75 or more. That's defensedrinks.com.
Not good.
Get to the free throw line. Get to the free throw line.
So let's try and I was pretty despondent last night, as Hunter and Trevor can attest. It took it took someone on Twitter today saying the exact same things that I was saying last night for me to snap out of it.
To be like, oh, I sound crazy.
Like yesterday, I was literally like, I don't think BYU makes the tournament. Like, I don't think I can maybe see them winning two games the rest of the season. And today on Twitter, someone said BYU is a paper tiger. They've lost every game to like every good team they've played. They've lost. They'd be lucky to get to the tournament. And that's where I was like, okay, that's a little far. In your minds, is BYU a tournament team? Because like to me, that's the measure of like, as long as BYU makes a tournament for me, it doesn't matter what BYU does the rest of the season. Like, I just want to get there.
This was heat of the moment, Joe. And it's a funny text.
I send it to you so it doesn't go public. No, I'm just kidding.
Call me a gloomy Gus, but I have no faith in them with under 7 minutes to go with any kind of lead in Big 12 play. None. I could see them winning two games the rest of the way. And I said, that's definitely gloomy Gus.
Yeah.
So here's
absolutely.
So here's BYU. So BYU is 12 games remaining. What we can go through them. Home against Texas, on the road against West Virginia, Oklahoma, Kansas State, UCF, Oklahoma State, Baylor, Kansas State, Kansas, TCU, Iowa State, Oklahoma State. 12 games. What does BYU's record have to be in those 12 games before conference tournament for you to say that, like, yes, they are going to be in the tournament?
They have to win five games in conference. They have to go 7-11 in conference at a minimum. So they got to win five more. I think they're definitely going to be favored against West Virginia and Oklahoma State. Realistically, like, Ken Pom has BYU favored, I think, in five of the next six.
That's kind of nuts to me.
But like, again, Ken Pom and the net ratings, like, love BYU. They think BYU is a really good basketball team, which I think they are as well.
Who's the one? Is it Oklahoma or Texas?
Probably Oklahoma.
I think it's Oklahoma. They're favored against Texas. BPI gives BYU, I think, a 77% chance to beat Texas on Saturday.
Texas just smoked Oklahoma. I watched that whole game yesterday, actually.
Right. But Texas also lost on their home court to UCF. So like, the conference is drunk. I don't know what to make of it. Anyone can beat anyone on any given night. I do think BYU is going to hang tough with absolutely everyone they play at home. BYU is going to have a puncher's chance to win. Yeah. So
Texas did blow out Oklahoma and also beat top 10 Baylor, but they also lost at home to UCF, lost on the road to West Virginia, and got wrecked at home by Texas Tech. So
right now, BYU has a 80% chance to beat Texas, 82% chance to beat West Virginia.
That seems so high.
47% chance to beat Oklahoma.
BYU's percent
chance. 83% chance to beat first place Kansas State at home. 83% chance.
I'll take it, I guess. Quest Glover revenge game.
87% against UCF. 78% chance against Oklahoma State. 70% chance to beat Baylor at home. 55% chance to beat Kansas State on the road. And a 36% chance to beat Kansas on the road. So BPI has BYU favored in how many games do they have left?
12.
9. Oh, 12?
Well, 12 total games.
One left this month, 8 in February, 3 in March, so 12.
Oh, yeah. So they're favored in 7 of their next 9 games. TCU, they have an 86% chance. Iowa State's favored.
How is BYU?
94% chance. Yeah, so they're favored in 9 of their next 12 games. Like, that's nuts. It's so hard for me to wrap my head around that.
I need to see it.
It's also crazy because they have Iowa State as a 76% chance to beat BYU, even though BYU just beat them by like 20 points. So like, winning, that's what's crazy is like,
well, winning on the road in the Big 12 is so hard. And like, and again, like, I the mean, loss yesterday against Houston's the number 4 ranked team in the country. Like, none of us should be number one in Ken Pom. Like, none of us should be upset in a vacuum that BYU lost to Houston. it's just because they lost to Cincinnati and Texas Tech when they have big leads in those games. That's where it gets a little discouraging. But like in a vacuum, none of these losses are necessarily bad. I'm just afraid that they're going to start piling up and the team's mentality starts falling apart a little bit.
So on that note, is Texas this Saturday at home a must win?
No, like honestly, no. And that's the beauty of being in the Big 12. I think BYU has to get, I think they'll have to get 6 quad one wins. So 3 more quad one wins the rest of the way in their next 12 games. And I think 7 of those are probably a quad one opportunity. Like, I think BYU can probably do that.
Okay. Trevor, because you texted last night, you felt it was. Do you still feel as though Texas is a must win on Saturday?
I feel like it's a must win, similarly to how UCF I felt like a must win, just to right the ship. I think,
yeah, that's fair.
I think, mental.
Yeah, I think Joe's right in that the only thing that's going to kill this BYU basketball team in the end is going to be themselves and a mental decline. And I think going to West Virginia on a 3-game losing streak, like going into Morgantown, who just beat Kansas on a 3-game losing streak, is asking a lot more than going in to Morgantown, a winnable game, having just beat Texas. Like that's the difference to me.
See, and that's why I would say West Virginia is the must win.
Yeah, no, because I think West Virginia, the 3 games against West Virginia, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, BYU they cannot afford a loss in those games.
Yeah, and probably even maybe home against UCF.
Yeah,
and home against.
I mean, those are the four. Those are 4 of the 5, right?
So I mean, you need 5 the rest of the way, right? Like the low hanging fruit is West Virginia, who's 7-12. On the road against Oklahoma State and home against Oklahoma State, home against TCU and home against UCF. Like those are the low hanging 5 games, right? Like you can win those 5, which are all probably should be wins. And if you do that, you're in the tournament, like regardless of what happens in the other 7. Right. I do think that BYU can lose to Texas, to your point, Joe, and be fine, because like that's a game that you can get back somewhere else on the schedule, in terms of like quad one, quad two, whatever it ends up being. You lose to Texas, and then you lose on the road to West Virginia, and then you have to turn around the next, you know, you're at West Virginia on a Saturday, and then Tuesday evening you're in Norman playing number 11 Oklahoma. Like you might lose that. And now you're at home against Kansas State, who, like you said, is number 1 in the conference at the current moment. Like they're a good team. Like they were a good tournament team last year. Like that's a losable game. And now you've lost 4 straight going into a home game against UCF and then a road game against Oklahoma State. And like those are 2 should be wins, but who knows? Like if you've now lost 4 straight, where you're at mentally. And if the snowball has started to roll down the hill and suddenly you find your, like what we saw with the BYU defense in football, right? Like now suddenly we know how good you are, but for one reason or another, you're not playing like it. Like you're giving up 50 points to TCU and you're letting Iowa State, you know, pretty much end the game at halftime. Like suddenly you games in which should be competitive and games for at least basketball, you should be winning. You're just not doing it anymore. And so that to me is why I think West Virginia, if I had to say like which is a must win game in the next few, like the West Virginia one to me is the one where it's like BYU has to take care of business in Morgantown. Like they just beat Kansas. Like you can't go in underestimating West Virginia just because they have a losing record. On paper, they're not very good. First year, new head coach. Like again, I just sat here and said that like that's a should win for BYU, but I don't think the team can look at it that way. Like you've got to go in and handle business, because if you don't, like, again, like that might be the nudge that pushes the snowball as it starts to roll down the hill and BYU just totally goes off the rails.
Yeah. I do know what BYU fans can do to ensure a win on Saturday. And that is every time Texas shoots a free throw, just give them the old horns down. because they mentally, they will absolutely fall apart. Their minds cannot fathom two fingers pointed to the ground. Like it just would.
It's those like completely.
Their coach would sue.
It's those health their where it's face, like doctors hate this one trick. It's like Texas basketball players hate this one trick.
Their faces will just melt like it's the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. It just
Richie Saunders hitting a three and then looking at the Texas bench and hitting the horns down may be enough to cause World War III. Like
there will be a mushroom cloud on that bench. They will just disintegrate.
Horns down is the apple to Texas's doctor. Okay. Like a horns down a day keeps the Longhorns away.
What's great. Do you think, in all honesty, Richie Saunders, who apparently is like the most hated man in the Big 12, like, which I kind of,
I literally talked
some smack.
No, I literally had, one of my coworkers, one of the partners at the firm came into my office today and goes, I don't know who that number 15 guy is for BYU, but he just has the most punchable face in the entire world. And it's just like, he doesn't do anything. Like literally all he does is just get buckets and boards and hustle, and everyone hates it. They hate him for it.
I guarantee though, him and Trevin talk and they talk a lot.
I'm sure.
One of my favorite stories. I was talking to Richie Saunders about this before I did my face-to-face time with him. But when he was playing, when they were playing North Carolina State, there was a moment where Richie had just scored and they kind of did like the little close-up zoom in of him. And he is looking directly at the guy that was nearest to him that he just scored on. And he is telling him, you are too small. And the guy had about 4 inches on him. I mean, you want to talk about it, Joe? Like, he rebounds, he hustles, he's super. Like, that is very annoying, like game style, because it's you can't shut it off. But then he turns around, you're already pissed off, and he's now telling you that you're too small. Like, all of a sudden, you catch an elbow to the neck, but you take that too because you got the guy kicked out. He's just him and Mel, they just poke and prod.
But would there be a better way to gain favor in the eyes of like your Big 12 brethren than to hit the horns down on Texas? Like, I feel like because of the feelings that the rest of the Big 12 has towards Texas.
You go and you do something like this and totally redeem yourself.
Like, that's the key.
Jack Anderson, president of The Rock. I implore you, I am begging you, before every free throw, the front, like the Rock board, holds up a sign that says what they're supposed to do during that free throw. I am begging you to make one that says horns down on every single free throw. That picture will circulate through all of Big 12, and BYU will instantly become the favorite. If 6,000 students in unanimity, is that the right word?
Hand in hand, arm in arm,
the entire arena throwing the horns down. That picture will last for generations if BYU is able to pull this off.
That'd be a fire photo. Please credit us too if it.
They usually hold up the Y's too, right? I mean, you could do both. You could do both. It's not a problem.
But they don't hit the Y's while the other team's shooting free throws, right?
Oh, that's true. You're right.
I am positive. I'm positive that Tom Holmoe will not allow it. Like, Tom Holmoe is a vigorous advocate of like, do not like cheer for your team, not, you know, cheer for the downfall of others.
This helps my team win.
Just do it once. Like, what are they going to do? Kick out all the students? Like,
do it
just
every time. Don't let some old guy dictate what you, the student, is going to do at a basketball game.
I need to see it.
Who's he going to apologize? Like, he'll apologize to Texas, but they're leaving. Like, so who cares?
I feel like I'm being punked here. I feel like we are on a hidden camera show where everyone was told, okay, treat this thing as if it's literally life and death. And I'm the only one that wasn't told about it.
It's like the Impractical Jokers where they're in the ear of the Texas coach. They're like, now cry about horns down in the post press conference.
They treat it with like this sacredness of something literally that's holy. And if you throw it horns down, it'd be the equivalent of like someone mocking the temple for us. Like, it just like,
look, we played San Diego State enough to know what actual like yeah. crossing the line looks like.
Like real bigotry and hatred and
looks it's, like. And a little horns insane. Down is not it.
Like
and it, this, by the way, this makes no sense. This looks nothing like a Longhorn or your Longhorn mascot. It has bothered me since I was 12 years old. This makes a lot more sense.
It's more like
this. This what BYU's hand sign. This makes a lot more sense than this. This means nothing. What is this?
But this means everything.
This is everything.
Turn it upside down. Yeah, that's everything. But yeah, that Reggie Saunders and I need the rock.
How do we get the U down to be as devastating? That's the next question. Is how do we get to the point where this and this?
Well, I mean, BYU fans definitely do this, but
someone did it when they beat. Was it Puka? Like after he had his touchdown or Samson had his touchdown? And they like ran up in front of the rock and they did the U down. I don't know.
No, I know Francis Bernard gave us the U up when he had his pick six. And I you know what? I get it. I get it now.
I was going to make it.
I get it now.
Drinking hand gesture joke, but I thought that might be too far.
I was about ready to jump out.
Let it be known, I was too big of a man to make the drinking hand gesture joke.
The
record show. Speaking of football, Hypie Award winners.
It's been
so
long.
It's not as grand of a reveal, just because BYU football was so bad. But we put the nominees out like a month ago, so we might as well do the winners. Play of the year. Winner. I'll just do the winners. We don't need some big thing. Now I'm sad again thinking about BYU football. The winner for play of the year is Chase Roberts' touchdown catch versus Arkansas.
Ta-da!
Not even close either. 65%. Second place was Darius Lasser's catch versus Texas Tech. Game of the year. A resounding result with 77% of the vote is BYU at Arkansas. But also let the record show while I'm making records show. Second place was BYU versus Oklahoma.
That is so sad. I could not allow BYU's best win to be a loss.
Best game is a loss. Special teams player of the year. Closer than game of the year was, not by much though, is of course Ryan Rico, 68% of the vote. Shout out to the one person that voted for Austin Riggs too.
Nice.
A true hype train.
Austin
member.
Riggs bomb.
Yes, Rutgers legend Austin Riggs.
Not even Austin himself, his mother.
Yeah. Is he going to Rutgers?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Big Ten football, baby.
How can you say no to the Shiano man? Newcomer
can turn out a Rutgers education.
That's true. Piscataway is the Harvard of New Jersey. So newcomer player of the year, first close one, 45% of the vote, barely sneaking past AJ Vongpachong is LJ Martin, who AJ announced he was leaving today.
He's out of eligibility.
So what was the purpose of the minute long? I don't know. It was very weird because it was like announcing he's going entering the draft, but like wasn't really an announcement.
Everyone's got to announce.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, LJ Martin, newcomer player of the year. I think no surprise there. Darius came in at third with 17% of the vote. Offensive player of the year. Great one. Lots of competition here. More competitive in the voting than the BYU offense was for the majority of the season.
Hey-o.
Was 44% of the vote. Chase Roberts. Who is not going to Utah, at least not yet.
Whoa.
Well, I mean, Cody Epps entered the portal while we were on the cruise, and that was in like the spring. So who knows? But he has been in like all of BYU's weight room, like walking out, answer the question videos. So I think it's safe to say. Not going to Utah, like some anonymous people were saying on Twitter. Defensive player of the year, another resounding result for our boy Eddie Heckard, 61% of the vote. Second place, Jacob Robinson, who did announce that he's staying at BYU. That was a more concrete announcement. And then most improved player of the year. This is, I think, the closest one of the whole bunch. We had a tie for third place between Harrison Taggart and Chase Roberts, each getting 16% of the vote. And in first place with 36% of the vote is Crew Wakely.
Nice.
So shout out to Crew Wakely. Ethan Slade in second place with 32%. And the Hypie Heisman. In fourth place is whoever the backup quarterback was that week with 9% of the vote.
Nice.
LJ Martin in third place with 17% of the vote. And now between Ryan Rico and Eddie Heckard for BYU Player of the Year, drum roll please, Trevor, is Eddie Heckard, 48% of the vote.
Woo! Thought we were going to have a punter there for a minute.
No shock there.
That made me sad, guys. We should have started with that.
All 25% of the vote was probably Johnny Linehan.
I'm not feeling very hype trainy about football this year. I'm just like,
we haven't talked about Gary Bohannon yet, have we?
We did a little bit on the last one.
I'm not kidding.
The only hope I have is this is exactly as indifferent as I felt about BYU basketball coming into the year. And they ended up being awesome with very minimal roster turnover. So I'm hoping that maybe the guys just wake up and
decide to be good
and become better at football.
12-team playoff now.
No Texas or Oklahoma either. Wide open race.
And that Jerry Bohannon's shoulder surgery was turned out to be like Henry Rowan Gardner's from Rookie of the Year, where he just comes out with a cannon. So there's hope. It's not a very practical reason for hope, but since when have we ever been practical in the Hype Train podcast?
Never. I always say it's easy to exceed expectations when the expectations are zero. I think that's where we're at with the
overall. I just hope it's not the meme where it's like our expectations were low, but holy F. That's the only thing we have to avoid is that becoming that meme.
Man. Good news. Faletau Satawala got a ratings bump on 24/7. He is now the highest rated BYU recruit in the Kalani Sitake era and the highest since Troy Hines. Received a 94 rating, and I think it was 2012, which was a Bronco era recruit.
Don't put on him, Joe.
But this time it will be different. This time it'll be different.
I think I watched Troy play two snaps. Can
we get Devin Brown?
We'll see if he enters the portal. He should.
Dude,
I was going to say, for some reason, my mic came unplugged, but I was going to say, that's like the only thing where I'm like, that would give me a little expectations is getting Devin Brown. Honestly, the quarterback situation has me in a depression.
It's so crazy. Like, if the quarterback situation was better, I'd feel better. The offensive line situation isn't great either, but like,
much worse though.
If BYU had a quarterback I felt any kind of confident in, I'd be like, yeah, BYU can make a bowl game this year. But now I'm just like, I don't know. We'll see if hopefully Jake Retzloff can make a giant leap or Treyson Bourget turns out to be the next Baylor Romney walk-on.
The walk-on from Western Michigan. You are our only hope.
just for fun, we leave spring camp. And they announce Noah Lugo as the starter. What do you
think? Probably rather that than Gary Bohannon.
Man. Just because Hunter hates him so much.
I don't hate him.
You're not even saying his name right. It's Jerry.
Well, it starts with a G.
It's not Gary Bohannon?
It's Jerry Bohannon.
I've been trying
not to correct you, Trevor, the last like 2 weeks we've been doing the show, but it is absolutely Jerry Bohannon.
Well, let's hope Jerry Bohannon's better.
Here's the thing, is like, I'm going to find myself on the Coug Connect cruise with Jerry. And I'm going to have, what do I do? Like, I have to be like, look, dude. Yeah, like, here are some of my past tweets where I'm like, you're not, I don't have any faith. But here's the thing, is like, that's how I feel. Like,
Hunter's taking his arm through a full range of motion. He's like, does this hurt?
No one would be more happy to be proven wrong than I would be. Like, that's the thing, like, I would love to be wrong. I'm wrong all the time. Most times, probably, in fact. But like, I don't like feel like I'm not wrong in this situation. It's tough. I can only go with what I've seen recently, and fair or not to him, it was not good. Like the most recent evidence we have is a shoulder surgery and not playing well at USF. I think they went like 1-11 the year that he was the starter. Granted, he started only like the first half, but couldn't win any games.
My one reservation there.
He also threw that friggin' ball to Max Thule. That,
he already has his first completion to a BYU player out of the way. First touchdown pass.
More touchdown passes to BYU.
He already knows players. What it's like to throw to the guys with the Y's on their helmet. All right.
I'm pretty sure also, BYU was when he was at Baylor, BYU Peyton Wolgar was the first player to intercept him all season. Yeah. So
literally,
he has two completions to BYU players in his career, and both of them were in the end zone. So take that, Hunter.
One was caught in the end zone. The other one ended up in the end zone.
Pull up, let him cook.
Take that, Hunter.
Which, speaking of, do we know when the Coug Connect cruise is? Either if we don't, keep an eye out for it.
Wasn't it in March before?
It was in March of last year, yeah. But I think we're aiming for later. I think we might do after spring ball. I don't know.
By the time we know who the quarterback is at that point.
Good grief.
I do think Jake is coming.
Well,
Joe's going to have to eat his words for Jake.
That could be really fun.
If I'm
going to
have an awkward interaction with Jerry, you're going to have an awkward interaction with Jake.
But I love Jake. Jake is the man.
He's your Corona guy.
He is my Corona guy. I love Jake. Right? No, who I had to eat my words with, I literally had a tweet about Keaton Slovis from like 3 years ago that was like, can we please stop pretending that Keaton Slovis is good?
And then you'd retweeted it in November. You're like, hey, just a reminder.
Here's the question though. We could have played the game. Was it Keaton or was it Zach Wilson?
With my tweet.
Yes.
Well, guys.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Really been off the rails at the end. This is why I don't tweet about players.
Good times ahead. We're, guys, it's all love. We want to be proven wrong. We probably are. We don't know anything. But yeah, Jerry Bohannon throwing for 3,500 yards and 33 touchdowns this year, manifesting it now. Go Cougs!
Horns down.